Hi, good morning. Gee, someone who's shorter than I am. Well, my daughter calls me. Oh, I've had that effect on people before. Sorry.
I do.
Can you tell I used to be an entertainer? I'm going to do this very quickly because I promised Mark he could have some of my minutes. basically, I will just give you a very quick synopsis of how I came to be where I am today. And actually, I am the one person here who makes a great deal of money off publishing. My father died in 1970, and I immediately sat down to write a book about my experiences as an incest victim from the time I was 7 until I was 17. It took me 10 years to get the book published. Oh, big surprise. And people kept saying, well, you know, but we liked your writing. And I decided that I would become a successful author, and then they would have to publish the book. And indeed, Daddy's Girl was the 15th book I published. I had no idea when I published the book in 1980, I thought I was doing a good thing. I thought that I was bringing a very important subject out of the closet that would benefit literally millions of women, men, children who were being abused. That has been, always will be, my prime focus, is that children are abused every day of the world, and my primary argument with the whole recovered repressed memory issue is that the attention has been taken away from the children who most need it. I have written a lot of pieces for various of the false memory groups around the world, and this is a piece that I wrote for Felicity Goodyear Smith for her New Zealand journal. Last night I had a little epiphany because I've been guarding the pieces that I have written for the journals very carefully because I didn't want to give the other side, as we shall call it, any more ammunition, because they've already used my book as a handbook on how to be a victim, which really deeply offends me. It takes away from people who have truly suffered a terrible loss of childhood, loss of privacy, loss of self, loss of self-esteem, loss. However, I suddenly realized that if they take this piece seriously, it will put an end to the movement altogether. And I thought, well, okay, then let's print this everywhere. I've been talking with sexually abused people for almost 40 years, having decided very early on that once I'd broken my silence, it could only work to the good to keep on talking. My feeling was that the worst thing that could happen to me had already happened, so aside from the possibility of some mad person murdering me, nothing more terrible could result from my telling people about my childhood. I say this in order to illustrate that I have spent most of my life talking to men, women, and children about our experiences of incest. Often, I was the first person ever to speak openly to these people about the matter, and through time, a certain fundamental sameness in our behaviors began to become clear to me. I will outline the aspects of that sameness in order to contrast them to the differences I've perceived in the recent crop of new victims. I have noticed that the old victims are angry people, but our anger is directed primarily at ourselves. Invariably, we hold ourselves responsible for the incest. Something about us, our bodies, our eyes, our mannerisms, our sauciness, something we said or did or thought caused the incest to happen. Because we were children and therefore powerless to protect ourselves, we obeyed. Because the adult in question refused to acknowledge that what was happening was wrong, and we too knew it was wrong, our only alternative was to believe that because we obeyed despite our knowledge of the wrongness, we were therefore somehow complicitous. While we had anger toward the offending party, the bulk of our anger was strenuously, often violently, directed at ourselves. I've met a number of cutters and slashers, people who repeatedly injured themselves, creating pain to deal with the pain. The new victims, on the other hand, do not blame themselves. Rather, they blame anyone and everyone else. This failure to hold themselves responsible all but shouts at me. It is in defiance of everything I've come to know about sexually abused people. We old victims spend much, if not all of our lives, drowning in shame for the reasons I've stated above. The new ones seem, if anything, proud of their status as victims. They like to beat up people with their victimhood, raging loudly about it, while we old ones spoke and still speak in hushed, shameful, choked tones about what we've experienced. We take no pride in having lived through an experience that deprived us of everything from our privacy to any respect for our own bodies. We old victims wanted at best an apology, acknowledgement of the truth of our experience, and open acceptance of our reality by our families. We want to be loved because we have felt unloved and unlovely. The new ones want vengeance. They blame everyone indiscriminately, wanting public recognition, money, trials, and complete severance from their families. They want to be elevated by their new status to be within their lifetimes enshrined as victims. We old ones wish as few people as possible to know of our horrible experiences. We don't want anyone to know what we allowed to be done to us. New victims are loud, proud, and massively contentious. They don't demonstrate any of the fears and phobias I still, to this day, experience. I think this can only be because their suffering has all been imagined and implanted. Only people who have experienced long-term subjugation and gradual loss of self can truly know and feel the lengthy roster of secret fears we spend the remainder of our lives trying to overcome. And no book, no therapist, no one can successfully coach another into true victim status. It's somewhat of an intangible, I grant, but I have no difficulty recognizing my fellow victims. There is something in our eyes, in our manner, in our very bodies when we prepare to broach the subject. And the new victims cannot act out these behaviors because they and their therapists are simply unaware of the codes we old ones have implanted in our brains that allow us to know each other. There is no aha when talking to someone with recovered memories. Yet it's always there when I talk to someone whose memories are, for want of a better word, intact. Perhaps, after all, as the cliche goes, it takes one to know one. And that's kind of an arrogant sounding statement to make, but for decades now I've been able to know the ones around me. I can pick it out of the air around people almost like an electric current or an aura. We exude a certain hurt that is almost tangible. There is a lot in life that can be faked, and a lot of fakes manage to pass muster. But I keep wondering what in all of this horror of imagined history is being accomplished. Who benefits? As far as I can see, no one at all, except some so-called therapists who are reaping cash rewards for convincing gullible people that black is white.